don't know if I have a lot to say, but when I have something to say, I want people's attention. If I've done a public speaking engagement or I'm speaking during a meeting, when someone is just like zoning out or not paying attention, that just like really hurts. Welcome to Vin the Podcast. It's good to be back in studio. I'm Ted, joined by my good friend and partner in radio, Joel Sam. Today, we are broadcasting from the Bryan College Station location of the Four Seasons Total Landscaping.
Yeah, it turns out they gave us a really good deal.
You know, we were trying to book the Four Seasons, but for some reason, when we, you know, had our intern Google Four Seasons, the first thing that came up was the Four Seasons Total Landscaping.
Yeah, the good thing is it's really helpful for our budget. The bad news is we're just kind of in this dingy warehouse, and we're surrounded by some shears and old piles of brush.
And some forklifts that are going back in the background. So if you hear the sound of real work happening, that's probably what it is.
Ted, this is real work that we're doing.
It is real work, but it's thought work, which it is taxing. It is taxing at the end of the day. And, you know, we're working hard during the holidays so that you don't have to.
That's correct.
We're putting out good content and good radio so that you can enjoy a little bit of downtime. So mm-hmm. We've got you covered. We're working hard while you're hardly at work.
Great. Well, Ted, what's on your mind today?
What's on my mind today? Well, Joel, we have some old business to take care of.
We've got a lot of business to take care of. It's been a while since we've been in studio. And tell us, what's the first thing on our docket today?
Well, I think the first thing on our docket is we've got some poll results.
Yes, we're big Nate Silver fans here at Venn, doing a little bit of statistician work on the side. We've got an intern, he's like a statistics minor, and he's been running some numbers for us. And there's a poll that was on the Venn Instagram account asking who of the two of us, Joel or Ted, got infected with the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, about a month ago.
Yeah, and you know, Joel, I've got a really funny story about that I haven't told you about.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
So I, you know me, and listeners have probably figured out that I'm pretty coy, coy guy. And so to spoil it, Joel was the one who got COVID.
But, yeah, but we want to know, but, you want to know but, the results.
No. This is important. This is important. I had not told, other than the people that I had been exposed to, that I had, you know, potentially had COVID. But my parents saw the Instagram story and they saw the poll. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as they saw the poll, they thought, oh my goodness, maybe Ted has COVID. Mm-hmm. So I received a frantic phone call.
Uh-oh.
So it was good. Thankfully, I didn't have COVID. Ended up not having it.
Yeah.
But my parents found out.
Well, it turns out, you Venn listeners, 67% of y'all thought that I had it, and 33 thought that Ted had it, which, to be fair, 67% of you are right. But Ted, how did you feel when you saw those results?
Baby, I've got to be honest. I was a little hurt, a little offended that still so many people thought that it was me.
Yeah.
I mean, bro, who are we kidding? You're the most, one of the most extroverted, outgoing people I know. So I just have a hard time seeing how our listeners, having to choose between you and me, you know, chose you. So listeners, I'd love to hear a little bit of your explanation, a little bit of your rationale and reasoning for why you might have been more likely to choose me.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been a landslide.
It should have been a landslide. Should have been a
90-10 split.
The irony is that I didn't get COVID from doing anything socially irresponsible. I got it from a roommate.
Mm.
So I was just, I guess I was doing
just
pretty.
Living your life.
Yeah, pretty normally. Just living my life. Following. And I don't want the listeners to think that I'm a rule breaker over here. Yeah. That I don't care about the spread of the virus. I'm a very, very pro mask, very pro social distancing. However, I do still do some things sometimes safely.
Sure.
I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's funny is, like, if I'm honest, I don't know if my amount of social activity has decreased that much after COVID, because to be honest, I didn't do that much before COVID started, which maybe is kind of sad.
Dude, that is a travesty.
That's the, I don't know, just keeping it real, trying to be honest and authentic with the listeners.
Yeah. We've got more statistics for you, folks. Okay. So just in case that wasn't enough, we've got more. That intern is like cranking away. He really wants to prove that his major is worth something.
Yeah.
So, well, Ted, what's our episode today? That'll lead into this.
Well, I know that we wanted to come back to some of the personality stuff that we talked about a couple months ago. And, you know, last week, Joel and I had about 20 minutes to kill.
Well, let's hold off on that. Let's hold off on that. Yeah, no spoilers yet. The bit of statistics that I ran, this was, this was September 26th. I tweeted, so, you know, shout out to all you guys following us on Twitter. Tweeted, I just recorded a podcast episode about personality tests on Ven the Podcast. Which is your favorite? And the choices were Enneagram, Myers-Briggs, DISC, and StrengthFinders. Ted, do you want to guess the results of this poll?
Probably Enneagram. That's the, I don't know, I feel like that's the most popular personality
test. It's in vogue.
Right, it's in vogue, as we might say. Okay. What was the percentage? Let me guess.
Myers-Briggs. Guess the percentages.
I'm going to say Enneagram was 70%, Myers-Briggs was 20%, StrengthFinders 10%, and nobody cared about DISC.
That's actually remarkably accurate. It was 58% Enneagram, 33% Myers-Briggs, 9% StrengthsFinders, and 0% DISC.
Oh, man. Maybe I should be an exit poller.
And not whoever's running whatever exit polls are going on in this nation. That's for sure.
Yes. I mean, those results don't surprise me. That's how I would rank them. That's how I find them useful anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I got some feedback on the last episode, Dispositional Dynamics, about how we didn't really talk about the Enneagram, even though that's the one that's in vogue. Mm. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we should talk about it, but I guess only if our listeners want to listen to yet another Enneagram podcast. So maybe we
probably not.
Probably not. Probably not. Honestly, I don't know if I want to.
I don't think I want to either. I think everything that could be said about the Enneagram has been said.
Except maybe my idea last episode to Enneagram type countries.
Yeah, that's good.
That's maybe it.
You know, did I ever tell you about the Enneagram podcast I listened to where the guy who was talking was a functional neurologist? Do you know what functional neurology is?
I have no idea.
It's like a combination between neurology and chiropractic.
Oh.
So it's a form of alternative medicine that fuses neurology with other stuff.
I'm very into alternative medicine, as you're well aware.
As I'm well aware. And all the snake gallbladder juice makers of the world, thank you for it.
Yes.
Thank you for the free advertising that you give them all the time.
So did he have anything as interesting to talk about as snake gallbladder juice?
He not only talked about functional neurology and explaining what that is and the career path he took to get there, but also talked about the Enneagram and how in his research as a functional neurologist, he has mapped the types of the Enneagram to the human brain. This guy basically takes the Enneagram diagram and he flips it upside down, and then he sticks it on top of an image of the brain. So by that logic, something like the 5, 6, 7 head triad corresponds to the left hemisphere of the brain, which, you know, there's that old kind of left brain, right brain dichotomy, which I don't even know if that's really grounded in neuroscience. I think I've heard it both ways, that it's like, oh, this is a real distinction or this isn't a real distinction. But, you know, the 5 lines up with the prefrontal cortex. And then you have the brainstem, which is like at the back of the brain, which lines up with the gut triad 8, 9, 1. And that's kind of, I guess the brainstem corresponds to instinctive qualities or characteristics. And so and then there's like right brain, which is allegedly more emotional. So I'm not sure how much of it is actual neuroscience and how much of it is like kind of forcing neuroscience to fit this idea. What do you think about that?
And I don't know if I could fit the idea, but I was just watching the video. I couldn't help but notice that Dr. Jerome looks like what I think of when I think of an Enneagram teacher. Big beard. He's got some gauges. Like in the background of his house, it's like all white. Everything's white. And then there was a book that Starbucks. It's like, I think, making fun of Starbucks. So I'm like, man, if there was a guy that was going to teach me the Enneagram, he at least looks like what I think that guy would.
Yeah. I mean, he's a pretty fascinating guy. He's from South Africa. He once was in a like life-threatening car accident that he just like walked home from and didn't get any medical attention for. Or like, no, not car accident. He was hit by a car, something like that. There's like a bunch of random aspects of his life. He has all of these degrees and qualifications in like different fields. And I don't know. I take these things with a grain of salt, you know, like I already take the Enneagram with a huge grain of salt because I'm like, it's made up. It's just a tool. Maybe it's useful. Maybe it's not. It's not a fundamental fabric of the universe. And then to go further and kind of pseudo-scientifically add detail and complexity to it. I mean, we're looking at some of the metrics he uses in his program that he has, and he uses a lot of, you know,
honestly,
units of metrology. Yeah,
it looked like a character card for like Dungeons and Dragons.
It really does.
You know, listeners, just to give you an idea, he did like a still screenshot, or maybe it was a page from his book, and there were just lots of line items, and one of them was for HP, and it said strength. So I'm like, well, do I get health points now? And how are those determined? And there were lots of like numbers.
There were lots of units. Like there was decibels for volume. There was miles per hour for speed. And he's using all this, you know, all these units of measure to make analogies to how to more effectively and somewhat quantifiably use the Enneagram, almost like a role-playing game.
Do you think we try and over quantify things that don't need to be quantified?
Well, it's like if you're taking this made up model and you're adding all these units to make it, I mean, the purpose of a unit of measure, I mean, I'm a scientist engineer. Like this is what I do all day. The units have value because they're grounded in reality. And sometimes we actually use relative units in metrology, which is the science of measurement. But when we use relative units, they still have physical meaning. We just don't have a connection between this particular unit and the fundamental physics. So, for example, if you're measuring the hardness of something, hardness is always relative. You can't really connect fundamental hardness to physics. All that's to say, when you use units, they have to have their value partially comes from their connection to a physical phenomenon or some sort of natural phenomena. So when you use these units to try to quantify something that's very subjective and also not a fundamental property of the universe, it's purely arbitrary. Like how do you use that? So again, I haven't done the program. So all this to say, this, I'm pretty skeptical of it in general. However, the one thing that he said that was, I thought was really valuable was, and this is part of his program, but at a high level, I think it is valuable. For him, he would say that most people take the Enneagram and they figure out their type and they're like, oh, this is me. I'm going to figure out like how I can better understand myself and then better understand how I can grow and et cetera, et cetera. However, what Dr. Jerome Luba says is to rank all nine types of the Enneagram when you take the test to understand what is your highest competency, or what he calls efficiency, and your lowest competency. And so by ranking them, you can understand like, oh, I'm like more efficient as a 7 or a 3, and I'm like low efficiency at an 8 or a 9. And that can help you grow because you're saying like, oh, like I don't have I don't operate in the 9 space, for example. And so maybe I need to, in order to become a more well-rounded person, more mature person, I could learn to operate in that way by sort of learning from 9s or pretending I'm a 9 and like acting like a 9, that sort of thing. What do you think about that? I think that was the most valuable thing I took away from that entire podcast I listened to.
Well, I mean, it's consistent with Strength Finders, for example, mm-hmm. which would say that you have all of the 30 something strengths, but you have ones that are closer to the top of that list, and those are the ones that more naturally play out. So yeah, I think that idea is consistent with ideas from other personality or strengths or motivational dispositional tests.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a lot of work, though.
It does sound like a lot of work. And it also sounds like it comes at a financial and emotional cost.
Yeah. Yeah. There'd be a lot of work. But I think there is value in, you know, not just trying to maybe pigeonhole yourself, such as, oh, I'm a type 1, so I'm just like this mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. When the reality is, you know, people were complex and our motivations can change when we're healthy or unhealthy or based on external stimulus. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think there's some value in it, but it also it's probably not something I'm going to pursue.
Yeah. Why do you think the Enneagram resonates with people so much, especially over the past couple of years? Even though it's been around for a while, it really skyrocketed. Maybe 2017, it was when it started to pick up momentum. And then 2018 was where it was really became everywhere, I'd say. Or 2019, I should say. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'll speak for everybody, but I'll at least speak for myself why I think it's a useful tool, even though I've just been making fun of it a little bit. I do think what I like about it, and maybe what some other people might appreciate, or if you haven't, I would encourage you to think about its use in this way. But it's really the idea that each person has capacity for high functionality, low functionality, maybe even things like good and evil. You know, we can all be stressed, we can all be relaxed, we can all be strong, we can feel challenged. And so I think what I like about the Enneagram is it has value in learning how other people act and are motivated and how you can interact with them. What it really does is it presents that complexity of people well, mm-hmm. in that how we're dynamic and we change constantly. And so what I like about the Enneagram is it does explore depth of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it in a way, I think it removes kind of the idea that there's like maybe quote unquote like good people and bad people.
Right.
And more that like within our own hearts, we all have the capacity to do good or to do evil based on the heart motivations we have.
Yeah. You know, I haven't really thought of the Enneagram as it corresponds necessarily to morality. I think I've thought of it in terms of health and unhealth, but not necessarily that more core idea of, are we doing good or are we doing harm? So that's interesting. I'll have to think about that. I'll have to take some time to wrestle with that.
And that's just my take. I might very well be wrong, but at least in my own life,
right.
I feel like that's how I've seen the test. And just as a follower of Christ, I feel like the Enneagram helps me think a lot deeper about sin and struggle.
Mm.
But in a way that also has some redemptive qualities too.
Right.
Like when I'm healthy. And so in that sense, it's a very useful tool. And that's, I think, because of how it's maybe, you know, been a useful tool in my life in examining sin and examining what it looks like to function well for the glory of God,
mm-hmm.
that it has those kind of individual, like good and evil applications. Mm-hmm.
You know, the only book I've read on the Enneagram is The Sacred Enneagram by Chris Huerts. And that's an explicitly spiritual book in the sense that it uses the Enneagram as a tool for spiritual practice. And not only just understanding oneself, but also understanding how one can better connect with God and better kind of move towards spiritual wholeness and using the Enneagram as a tool along that way. So I think the Enneagram has been most connected to spirituality instead of other personality tests. So I think that also may play a role in its virality, in the sense that people who are having conversations about faith or about personal spiritual growth are able to better integrate the Enneagram, versus I don't know if I've ever seen a Myers-Briggs Bible study before. I've definitely seen Enneagram Bible studies. So I think that's kind of one thing that's more unique about it, and kind of from a marketing perspective, I guess, has helped its growth.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the Enneagram is most useful in a context where you have the opportunity to explore your internal motivations and how your behaviors affect other people. Whereas, not that you can't do that with the Myers-Briggs test, but the Myers-Briggs, in my view, seems much more useful in the business context, where you're trying to more just learn the kind of the psyche of different people on your team. And not that there's, you know, not really great insights for people to learn from their Myers-Briggs test. But I just think that the insights are perhaps less useful in like that deeper sense. But of course, very extremely useful for teams.
That we've alluded to earlier. Ted, do you want to set the stage for our great moment of insight this week?
Yeah, so there was a really great moment of insight that Joel had this week during one of our pre-production meetings. We were having coffee, and this was before we were both about to go leave and head off for work. And Joel and I were just talking, and it kind of came up, like, what are motivations, like, what are some desires that people had, and
specifically the desire, or how do people best feel loved or valued?
How do you feel loved and valued? And Joel had this really brilliant idea. And so, Joel, do you want to explain how you started to develop this personality test in about 20 minutes.
Right. So, well, I didn't develop the test. The test is still yet to be developed. However, the personality model.
Yeah, the model.
It was about 20 minutes. And this is based on a conversation I had maybe a week ago with some other friends. But I was just thinking and brainstorming about, okay, how do people feel valued? Because I think that different people prioritize different ways of being valued. And so, for example, I have a friend who consistently emphasizes that her primary goal or desire is to feel known. And so sometimes, or often, in social situations or those sorts of things, I'll be talking about something I'm excited about that's going on in my life or a situation, and she maybe say, if that were me, I would not feel known in that moment. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't really care that much about feeling known in that moment. I just want to, you know, have a campfire with a bunch of people I just met, or go to a dance party, you know, so these sorts of things, like, that are critical elements of my life. It's not necessarily conducive to my friend's idea of what feels valued. And so that was kind of the little nugget that was in the back of my brain. And then Ted and I were talking about the same thing, trying to break it down. And I realized, hey, we can make a personality model out of this. And so we did. We challenged ourselves to make a model in about 20 minutes to show how people feel valued. And so the model.
Well, my favorite part about the model is that just as Joel pointed out in our last personality episode, that a lot of personality tests have these like four types models.
Right.
And so after about 15 minutes, we're like, oh, This model also has about four types as well. And so that was, of course, a fun little.
Yeah. And that was discovery. An accident that, and I think it does match with the four humors to a degree, but we'll get there. So, all right. So it also has a diagram, which that's part of the Enneagram's virality, is that there's a visual element. And so if I want this thing to go viral, it's got to have a pretty picture attached to it. And so right now, again, this is, you listeners, you're hearing a very unfinished version of this. But right now it looks kind of like a bow tie, and it has 4 points, and the 4 points are seen, included, heard, and known. And so the idea of this values test is that some people's primary value is to feel seen. Some is to, and what that involves is, the way we're defining it at least, is this idea of popularity and presence. And so those who want to feel seen enjoy maybe knowing a lot of people, being very connected. They enjoy networking. They are sort of identified to a degree by what they do and their reputation in a large, so they may be concerned about how many followers they have on a social media network. They may really enjoy Instagram and the nature of Instagram and how there's a sense of kind of vying for attention. So again, these four types are value neutral. However, they can manifest in positive and negative ways. So I think the seen type is something that can seem more negative than the others, I think, or more shallow. What do you think?
It could seem a little bit shallow, but I know that's not true. And I think just on our end, we probably just need to just change how it's described, how it's portrayed. Because I don't think wanting to be seen is shallow, but I think maybe just in like American culture, being seen or some of these things that were described can come across as shallow, that you just want people to know that you're somebody that exists, right, to be with people, but not a lot of depth, which I think is not true.
Yeah. Yeah. And the core question of the scene is, do I stand out? You know, I actually had the hardest trouble nailing down this core question, because what I really want to say is, am I popular? But I think popular has a negative connotation to it. I'm trying to look for another value neutral word to replace with popular.
Yeah, I think, do I stand out? I mean, I think even though a lot of what you described does not resonate with me, because I try and hide from people that I know in public places. But on the same hand, I will say this, like, I do take my outfit choices pretty seriously.
Yeah.
And so sometimes if I'm going to be seen, I want to be maybe seen or stand out for having like a cool outfit,
right,
or some interesting color combinations. But that's maybe the extent of how I want to be seen. So I like that. I like that better. Like, how do I stand out versus like, am I popular?
Yeah. And full disclosure here, I am almost pretty obviously a seen type. So it's interesting to think about. I don't know if this is true for you as well. Maybe we'll get there. But I think for me, it's surprising that the type that I would use to describe myself is kind of feels the most negative right now.
Mm.
I wonder if, and that's contrary to how I would expect myself to design something. Like, I thought that if I designed a personality model, that my type would be the best type. But that doesn't seem to be the case so far. So that's an interesting little psychological tidbit.
A little negative self-talk.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll figure
out. Always hurt people. A little negative self-talk always hurt people.
All right, the next type is the included. And this is people who really crave feeling a sense of community. And so they are the people who want to kind of be on the team. They're a team player. They don't necessarily want the attention or want to be in the foreground, but they want to feel like they're part of something greater. And so these are people who love getting invited to like a party or an event. But I would say that the scene also value that, but they would value that with a much wider network. Whereas the included, they're less concerned about having a quantity of friends, but they're more concerned about wanting to feel like they're a part of a squad or a group that has consistent engagement and consistent mutual growth, almost like you're in Friends or How I Met Your Mother or something, and there's a sense of rhythm and consistency with a friend group. What do you think about that, the included? Can you think of maybe people we know or just observations you've made about social dynamics?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I can think of, you know, some of the people that most faithfully came to like our trivia group, mm-hmm. or some of the guys that show up to our weekly movie night. Yeah, just it's the desire to be included, but yeah, not within that larger maybe context. But yeah, I liked how you said rhythm. There's a rhythm of community and a rhythm of who you're around and doing life with and how that's appealing. Yeah, and I think I can see the difference. And now that appeals much more to me than being seen. So I like I like where that's going.
Yeah. And to be fair, again, I definitely resonate with the feeling of wanting to be included. But I think the scene is more on the forefront of my mind sometimes. But again, almost to a fault. Like if I'm to compare them, it's like, well, like I think being included is maybe more valuable than being seen. But again, I don't know. Maybe we haven't fully fleshed out all the dynamics. The goal is to make this value neutral. And I don't think we're quite there yet. Well, the next type is the heard. And those who want to be heard, their core question is my opinion valuable? And so for them, they're kind of the people who have a lot of ideas. They have a lot of things to say. They feel fairly confident in what they're passionate about. And the way they feel valued is when other people are listening to them and respecting them as maybe a teacher or someone who has good ideas. If I were to compare the herd to a social network, it would be Twitter, because everyone on Twitter has a take and everyone is convinced that their take is the right one. Which, again, that's maybe the shadow side of the herd, is that you're constantly, maybe not constantly, but you're frequently concerned about, oh, do people care what I have to say? Do people think that I'm right? I think there's a sense of...
It's kind of like Oscar from The Office. Well, actually...
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's what I think of when I think of herd, because I think even... So probably the way you described it would be like, I would probably say that being heard is the largest value for me. And maybe for some people, they have a lot that they want to say, but I don't know if that's necessarily true for me. I don't know if I have a lot to say, but when I have something to say, I want people's attention. Like I know for me, if I've done a public speaking engagement or I'm speaking during a meeting, when someone is just like zoning out or not paying attention, that just like really hurts.
Oh,
like
yeah.
It hurts on a really deep level. It's like, wow, like what I have to say was so uninteresting or was just not valuable. They just decided, oh, I want to like tune out and I don't really care what this person has to say.
Yeah, that is tough.
Or if I'm in a conversation and I'm like telling a story and then never like get to finish it because something happens and then someone doesn't come back to say, hey, like, can you finish that?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, there's always interruptions in life. Interruptions happen. But it's maybe if there's not a desire to finish hearing the story or resume the conversation, then it's like, oh, like that story was maybe so boring or that point I was trying to make was so uninteresting. They just like didn't care.
Right, right. Yeah, well, yeah, thanks for fleshing that out for me, because I maybe resonate with this one the least. I'm not sure yet, but I mean, I guess I have to make the test and then take the test to find out for sure. But I think that really helped illuminate some of the values that you find that you gravitate towards, that you think about. And like all the types, there's a light shyness and a shadow side, excuse me. So... Do you think that your question that you ask yourself is my opinion valuable? Do you think that resonates with you? Or is there maybe a deeper question?
I think it is, honestly. As someone who I would say most of my strengths are intellectual in my mind. They're in the realm of ideas. And it's a way to have validation. I think when people are listening or want to know, like they want to hear what I have to say, that's a really great way to, yeah, for me, just to like feel cared for by friends. So yeah, I think the being heard is very important.
Well, the fourth and final type on this model so far, if there could be more than four types, actually, we are still working on it. So listeners, if you think that there's another way that people feel valued, feel free to contact us and be a co-author on the paper once we release it. The fourth type is the known. And this is what I was referring to earlier with my friend who I kind of started thinking about this with. The known is so concerned with, am I understood at the deepest level of my being? Like, is whoever I'm having a conversation with or a friendship or a relationship with, do they really know the real me? Do they fully understand me in all of my depth and complexity? And I think that's the maybe haunting question for the known. When they feel known, when someone predicts their kind of predicts their behavior, that's too clinical of a way to say it. When someone, maybe it's connected to empathy. It's like when someone knows what you're feeling before you tell them what you're feeling, I think that's when the known feel really known. There's a sense of...
Or I wonder if it's even maybe just noticing a change.
Oh, right.
Okay, something... Like, I know you, and I know how you typically act, experience, and I can just tell something's different.
Yes. I think that's it. I think that is... getting at this idea of they value intuition and perception in their relationships. You know, and we matched the types up to social networks, but the known is the type that's most likely to maybe reject social media or reject some of the shadow sides involved in social media. And they're more likely to crave one-on-one human interaction above anything else and more than any other type. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Like, I would kind of imagine this person is maybe, you know, and again, this is broad brush strokes, but even having, like, still having all these maybe social media type things, but only having it because it's almost essential in 2020 to keep up with friends, but they're not maybe putting what's really going on out there. It's more just to have instead of to communicate or talk about their life.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think there's some more levels to this model, and we haven't fully fleshed all these out yet, but I would kind of guess that people who gravitate towards feeling seen or wanting to feel seen and wanting to feel included are more extroverted, whereas those who maybe want to feel heard or want to feel known are more introverted. Ted, do you think that flies? Do you think that seems legit?
I think it probably does. But of course, I'm open to being convinced otherwise.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there might be something to be said that being included, you still maybe don't want that larger social interaction, but you want to be known by a few people. Or you just you want to feel part of a group, even if it's a relatively small group. So I'm open to being convinced.
Yeah, but I think
as the model is in its current iteration, I think those best map out most closely to having the heard and known being thought of as more the introverted and the seen and included as more extroverted, as a natural.
And again, we're thinking about, okay, what is your dominant value?
Yeah, of course.
And so I don't know. Yeah, I could think of exceptions maybe, but I could also think of generalities as well. The other kind of axis that we have, I would say that the seen and heard are both concerned with what they do, whereas the included and known are more concerned with who they are. So to put it in other words, the seen and heard are maybe more intellectual, and the included and known are maybe more emotional. What do you think about that breakdown?
It seems to make sense that just based on how you explain the model, that it is going to be that those are going to map. I know for me, and again, this is just based on my initial reaction to the model, is that, yeah, like I do want to be, I think, more valued for the thoughts and the ideas. And so I think more of the, like, the thinking is just something that is probably more true. Whereas, yeah, if you want to be included and you want to be known, it is probably a more feeling, emotional oriented. So, yeah, I think in general, I buy that.
Yeah. You know, I, as someone who gravitates probably towards the seen type, I've mentioned kind of this, that it has, at least to me, it appears to have a heavy shadow side. And so thinking about myself in those terms has kind of made me think about, okay, why do I value having a lot of acquaintances? Why do I get a dopamine hit whenever I am talking to my friend's roommate and I know someone who knew their sister 8 years ago? Like, why do I get a dopamine hit for that? This literally happened last night. It doesn't make any sense. Like, that's such a flimsy web of acquaintanceships. It has no bearing or meaning. However, there's some sense of value that I draw from being connected and being a networker in a similar fashion. You know, I'm a drummer. This morning I played the drums at church, and something that runs through my head a lot is like, okay, like, how do people perceive me when I'm playing the drums? Like, do they think that I'm good? Do they think that, like, my clothes are too flashy or not flashy enough? You know, do they think that I'm a distraction, or do they think that I'm cohesive with the group? These are kind of fleeting thoughts that run through my head as I'm trying to do my job well. But it's kind of, in general, I love being in that position where I'm seen, but I'm afraid of loving it too much. So yeah, that's the light side and the shadow side of that particular type that I've been wrestling with. And to be fair, I haven't seen quite as much of a light side. So maybe you can help me see that a little more.
Yeah. I think what's valuable for people that network and want to almost in a way like make connections with other people is that, one, I think about just it allows other people to feel more included, or it, I think it even if you're meeting someone new, an awareness of a relational connection from another time in life, or being, oh, I know this person that, you know, like we went to college together, or we did this summer camp together, this internship together, in a way it can reduce some of the initial maybe social discomfort or anxiety. And so I think it can make people just more at ease, mm-hmm. knowing that, oh, this is a stranger, but they're actually not a total stranger. We have someone in common. And so it makes people aware of familiarities.
Yeah.
And then I also think too, it just, you know, I know Joel from conversations that we've had, that one of your favorite things is, you know, helping people become friends who don't know each other, yeah. like introducing people. Like, I know the other day we were hanging out and one of the friends that you introduced me to, you said, man, I can't wait to introduce her to another friend that yeah. they can become friends.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, in a way, it can be a very service oriented thing. Just as you consider friends and people that know each other, be like, man, they would get along well.
Yeah.
And so I think I think there's a lot of potentially really good positive things that can come from wanting to be seen, and it's that desire to connect other people and getting fulfillment from watching them be connected.
Right. And I would also say, you know, part of how this model kind of operates is that the way that you feel valued is also typically the way that you try to make others feel valued, similar to the five love languages. So, for example, because I value feeling seen, it's really important to me that others feel seen. So when I'm in a large group, my natural instinct is to talk to everyone equally. If I'm at a dinner party with, and we like all go to a restaurant and maybe we take up multiple tables, I'll always, after I finish my food, I'll go to every table and like talk to every single person, you know, or for the most part. I've literally done this before. I call it making my rounds. It's something I do pretty frequently. Well, I mean, now in the age of COVID, that doesn't really happen very much anymore. But back in the day, you know, especially at a wedding.
Back in 19.
Yeah, back in 19. What a year. I would go to a wedding, for example, and during the meal when like no events were going on, I would just go to, just like the bride and groom make their rounds to all the tables, I would also make my rounds to multiple tables. And that's just kind of how I operate. It's I love distributing my friendship equally. I'm an equal opportunity friend to some degree. Obviously, that's not always wise or practical, but in some scenarios, it can make people feel seen, which even if that's not their primary value, it's something that everyone values at least a little bit. No one wants to feel invisible.
Mm. Yeah, I think what you said about, you know, for you, because you want to be seen, you want to provide that for others. Yeah, I think for me, because I want to be heard, I always want to listen to people. I mean, all my friends say I'm a very intense listener.
Yeah.
Like one of the most intense, and I'll just focus for a long time. And so, yeah, because I think I want that, I want to make sure other people have that and don't feel unheard. And I always, you know, I ask lots of clarifying questions and kind of stop people to like make sure not only do they know I'm listening, but that I've actually understood even what was said. It wasn't just that like I'm pretending to listen.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned earlier that this is a four-type test, and typically all four-type tests are drawn from the four humors in some way. So, Ted, I think we briefly discussed this the other day, but do you want to take a guess at or share what you think the four humor matchup is for these?
Oh, I can't remember the humors, if I'm being honest, but I kind of remember the animals. Maybe I can do that
okay,
instead.
Yeah,
I just like, I can't remember the humors, man. I've slept since then. But okay, so what I remember the animals, it's there's an otter,
yeah,
there's a lion, there's a retriever, and a beaver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For the otter, I guess it would be being seen. Mm-hmm. So those would maybe map together. Being included would be the retriever,
yeah,
probably. And then, okay, so that leaves being heard, and that leaves
being known.
Maybe the beaver is the being known, and the being heard is the lion. I don't know.
That's how I would match it
okay.
up. But again, I noticed your hesitancy. You would identify more as a beaver type.
I would.
And which the term is melancholic. I'm sorry. Is that right? Yeah, melancholic. I think so. But it doesn't quite match up with, you know, being heard, being the more dominant lion.
I am a Gryffindor.
You are a Gryffindor.
I am a Gryffindor.
So, yeah, this kind of goes to show that, you know, my earlier hypothesis is a bit of an approximation. Like, obviously not, as we discussed on the Lost podcast, not all of them match up perfectly. And so it's, I don't know if I like it or don't like it that it doesn't match up. I'm not sure. I'm undecided. But I would say that in general, I think being seen matches up with a sanguine or otter disposition. Feeling included matches up with the phlegmatic or retriever disposition. And being known matches up more with the melancholic or beaver disposition. And being heard matches up more with the cleric or lion disposition. I don't think these are fixed, rigid structures, but it does kind of help a little bit to kind of understand like, oh, like maybe how I feel valued is connected to how I present myself to the world or kind of my default engagement in social scenarios.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good thing to consider, and I'm glad we, you know, spent 20 minutes well spent earlier.
I think we spent more time talking about it than actually making the model.
Yeah, we've spent more time on this, you know, 52 minutes and 40 seconds of radio than we did actually creating the model. So we're getting to refine it. You know, our listeners are getting to hear some of our revisions and additions to the theory, you know, as we speak and as we learn. So. Yeah, I hope they feel included. You know, we had thought about, you know, this is the kind of thing that you would maybe put on a Patreon only.
It really does feel like that.
But, you know, it's the holiday season. We want to be thankful. You know, listeners, we're thankful for you. And so we want to let you be aware of this brilliant discovery by Joel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think it was just me. I think you helped Ted. And I think some other conversations I had with friends helped.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being heard and being included and being known.
Well, listeners, send us your feedback on the model. What are we calling it again? So far, I've been calling it the four values, but I'm sure there's.
I want to call it the bow tie test because I do have a really great collection of bow ties.
You do,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess this is probably as good a spot as any to put a pause on our content, but we have some business.
We have some big news.
Yeah.
Big news.
Yeah.
And Ted is going to announce it because he can be subtle and I cannot.
Yeah. So listeners, we're, you know, just so you're aware, we're currently in some business negotiations with some fellow creatives to help them with some content. So we're potentially going to be adding to our repertoire. Some friends have been working on a special holiday production type kind of deal. And so they've asked us to be a part of it.
Yes.
And so we'll hope, you know, these are the kind of things that the lawyers are always involved in. Yeah. And anytime like two sets of legal departments and agents and, you know, clearinghouses and accountants and the IRS get involved. It gets complicated. So we have to be pretty coy. But Joel and I are hopefully going to get to do a little bit of work explaining just the art of conversation.
Yeah.
And what that looks like. And so stay tuned for more.
Right.
You know, watch our social media. Absolutely. We might tease it out a little bit in some future episodes. But when we're able to share more, we'd love to do so. So yeah, just stay tuned. You know, again, another little present for y'all in the holiday season.
Yeah, absolutely. And we love creative partnerships, and we're really excited for this one. We're optimistic that it's an organization that we trust, that the content that's created by both parties in this kind of collaborative work will be really high quality content. And so stay tuned for actually a special episode of Ven related to this.
Yeah. Joel, if you could collaborate with anyone, let's just daydream, big. What kind of collaboration would you want to do?
That's a great question. I can't pick one. There's just too many. I'd want to do so much, but I think I would love to make a documentary. At some point, it's definitely on my list of creative pursuits to make a documentary. So I don't know. I'm not too picky about what the documentary is about, but it is one of my creative goals to do that. And so if Ven could partner with a documentary filmmaker who's studying maybe a specific topic that's has significant societal implications, that'd be great. That'd be a great fit, I think. Sorry, I can't get more specific than that.
Okay.
Really, I'd love to collaborate with anyone.
Yeah. I want to be a coffee mogul.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to be a coffee mogul. Like, I would love for Ven to get a coffee deal.
That would be great, actually.
You know, we could have our own roast of coffee, the Ven roast, and, you know, we could sell it to people. And yeah, you could brew a little bit of the Ven roast as you're listening to Ven.
That'd be perfect matchup. I'll talk to my roastery people too.
Okay.
So listeners, thanks for listening to Ven. This has been another special, more casual episode with Ted, Tyler, and me, Joel, Sam. Again, we'd love for you to share this with your friends. Shoot us an email at venthepodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to follow us on social media. The links are in the show notes. And until next time, Ted?
Four seasons, total landscaping.